We're 15, 16 years old, and as we've grown up, our reality has always been that same-sex couples have the same right to get married just like everyone else. Now it feels as if our future families may get taken away. When bigotry is based on sincerely held religious beliefs, it's still bigotry.
I often find myself saying, it's okay, you're going to be just fine, it's going to be great, you know?
To This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine, I'm Lucia Chappell. EU moves against anti-queer bigotry, Supreme Scare raises critical questions for LGBTQ youth, and backstage with a TV-tested top tenor. Those stories and more this week because you've found This Way Out.
I'm Marcos Najera.
And I'm Carol Myers.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending November 14th, 2020. The European Union's executive branch is issuing its first ever plan to combat anti-queer bigotry. This in response to rising homophobia in Poland and Hungary in particular. Criminalizing hate speech and guaranteeing LGBTQ parental rights across the continent are included in the five-year blueprint. EU Commission Vice President Viera Jourova pointed directly at Poland's President Andrzej Duda and Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban at a news conference this week. In her view, recent actions taken by their governments belong to the authoritarian playbook and do not have a place in the EU. Jourova said EU funds could be withheld from anti-queer governments as a means of enforcement. Duda rode a wave of anti-queer rhetoric to narrowly win re-election earlier this year. Local governments in about a third of Poland have declared themselves to be LGBT-free zones. Duda has vowed to ban any public school instruction that affirms LGBTQ rights or equality. A right-wing group called the Life and Family Foundation submitted a proposal to Poland's parliament this week called Stop LGBT. It would ban pride parades and any other public gatherings that promote equality.
In Hungary, homophobic far-right Prime Minister Viktor Orban squeezed the elimination of gender identity into laws aimed at combating the COVID-19 pandemic. New proposals camouflaged in pandemic restrictions include banning LGBTQ people from adopting children. Deputy Prime Minister Zsolt Semjen is proposing the addition of a ban on gender propaganda to the country's constitution. And Justice Minister Judit Varga proposed a constitutional amendment this week that would require families based on Christian culture that will protect children's rights to the gender identity they were born with. Commission Vice President Jourova announced the EU's five-year plan to combat homophobia and transphobia at a November 12th press conference. She declared that everyone should feel free to be who they are without fear or persecution. This is what Europe is about, and this is what we stand for. How much influence the new EU initiative will have on the continent's entrenched anti-queer governments remains to be seen.
Finland's parliamentary ombudsman routed its defense department this week in a skirmish over homophobic training materials. The ombudsman sharply criticized the department's holdover claim that homosexuality is an obstacle to military service. Finland removed homosexuality from its list of mental disorders in 1981. The training manual's discriminatory sections have now been eliminated. Finland is one of the most queer-welcoming countries on the planet. A public opinion survey conducted last year found that 80% of the population believes in full equality for LGBTQ people. Newly elected Prime Minister Sanna Marin is the proud daughter of lesbian parents. She said that her rainbow family's bedrock beliefs in equality inform all of her political views.
Norway's bisexual and transgender people now have protections against hate speech under its penal code, something lesbians and gay men have had there since 1981. Parliament made the additions this week. Offenders can be fined or jailed for up to a year for private remarks and up to 3 years for public comments. A judge can increase the penalties for people charged with violent crimes based on their victim's sexual orientation or gender identity. Norway is another Scandinavian country with high marks for its support of LGBTQ people. Its government announced earlier this year that it would prioritize LGBTQ asylum seekers as part of a new 3-year refugee resettlement plan.
The Donald Trump of the tropics is trying to top his namesake in blatant bigotry and COVID-19 carelessness. Brazil's President Jair Bolsonaro gave a rambling speech at the presidential palace on November 10th, in which he proclaimed, "We're all going to die someday. There's no use fleeing reality. We have to stop being a country of fags. We have to face up to it and fight. I hate this faggot stuff." Self-described proud homophobe Bolsonaro had already mocked wearing a face mask during the pandemic as too gay. With more than 162,000 Brazilians dead from complications of COVID-19, the South American nation trails only the United States in the number of deaths around the world from the virus. Bolsonaro is also among a handful of world leaders who have yet to acknowledge the election of the next U.S. president, and issued a veiled threat against Joe Biden in the same speech.
A group in Northern Ireland that promotes conversion therapy is suing one of the world's leading banks for closing its accounts. Core Issues Trust calls the action a human rights violation and is reportedly seeking thousands of pounds in compensation from Barclays Bank. Barclays has not announced a specific reason for closing the group's accounts. Their press release only says, "Our terms and conditions, like other banks, allow us to end a relationship with any customer, provided we give 2 months' notice." Core Issues Trust founder Mike Davidson disagrees. He claims it was a result of a coordinated campaign by LGBTQ activists. The group insists that it only provides support to people with homosexual issues who want to change their sexual orientation, but does not directly offer any alleged treatment to make queer people straight.
Michael Phelps of the religious legal organization Christian Concern charged that Barclays is acting as a moral arbiter of what views in society are acceptable and not acceptable. The irony of supporting faith-based discrimination against LGBTQ people while calling out the bank's action apparently escapes Core Issues Trust Chief Executive Andrea Williams. She demanded immediate government action to put a halt to this kind of mob rule and to assert the rights of biblically faithful Christian organizations to be serviced by businesses without facing such intolerant discrimination.
There will be no glittering nighttime parade down Oxford Street next year. COVID-19 has forced the world-famous Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras to take shelter at the Sydney Cricket Ground. Organizers announced this week that the encapsulated event would be held on March 6, 2021. In order to ensure the safety of the parade participants, spectators, and the community at large, a limited number of parade entries will circle the stadium, which holds a capacity of 23,000 people. Organizers say there will be fewer large floats, and the procession will center instead on the outlandish pageantry of costumes, puppetry, and props that make it such a phenomenon to witness. The event will still be nationally televised and viewable on social media. February's 2020 parade was one of the last large-scale events held in Australia before lockdown restrictions were imposed. The Mardi Gras committee quoted Sydney Lord Mayor Clover Moore in a press release issued this week saying, "I know many in our community, myself included, have held on to our happy memories of Mardi Gras 2020 to get us through this challenging year." Organizers expressed hope that the parade can return to its Oxford Street roots in a post-COVID-19 2022.
Finally, out-gay Martin Jenkins is the newest justice on the California Supreme Court. He was praised as eminently qualified and unanimously confirmed by the Independent Commission on Judicial Appointments this week. Jenkins grew up the son of a janitor who helped his father clean buildings. He abandoned dreams of becoming a professional football player to pursue the law. Jenkins spent several years as a civil rights attorney before moving up the judicial ladder, climbing rungs on both sides of the aisle. Democratic President Bill Clinton made him a federal judge in 1998, and California Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger put him on the state courts of appeal in 2008. Jenkins only began coming out 5 years ago. Now in his mid-60s, he's met the love of his life, real estate broker Sydney Shand. Jenkins says that he is truly humbled and honored to be asked by Governor Gavin Newsom to continue serving the people of California on the Supreme Court. Martin Jenkins' new job has made history in three different ways. Only the third African-American man to serve on the California Supreme Court, he becomes its first out LGBTQ justice and its first LGBTQ person of color.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending November 14th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is recorded remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Marcos Najera. Stay healthy.
And I'm Carol Myers. Stay safe.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, Noah in the Noah's Ark movie and TV series, and you've discovered This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
Remember to shut off that little voice in our heads that we all have, that we were all born with for whatever reason, that's constantly casting self-doubt or telling you to eat that cookie and then calling you fat for eating it.
A voice no one wants to shut off later in the program. We thought we did, but are LGBTQ rights about to hit a wall in the U.S.? The flow of legal challenges to queer protections is unending, and our outcasting overtime colleagues are alarmed about what the changed configuration of the Supreme Court portends.
This is Outcasting Overtime from Media for the Public Good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Lil, an Outcasting Youth participant. 5 years ago, in 2015, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the constitutional rights of same-sex couples were violated when states prevented them from getting married. This landmark case, Obergefell v. Hodges, made marriage equality the law everywhere in the United States. Just a few weeks ago, on October 5th, 2020, the Supreme Court denied review of a case that stemmed from Obergefell. This wasn't notable except for a statement from Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, one of the court's most conservative justices, joined by Justice Samuel Alito, another conservative. The statement condemned what they see as infringements on religious liberty caused by the Obergefell case. As Thomas and Alito see it, Obergefell has demonized people who cite religious beliefs in objecting to same-sex marriage. The statement gives us a lot to criticize, and we've posted a link to it on the Outcasting Overtime page on our website, outcastingmedia.org, along with our own running commentary. The unraveling of hard-won LGBTQ rights is becoming more and more likely with the sharp rightward shift in our federal courts. Here at Outcasting, the Thomas Alito statement has sparked new conversations about marriage equality, an issue that should have been settled by the Obergefell case. Let's be clear, marriage equality for LGBTQ people is about civil marriage under the law. It's not about religious marriage. There is no law forcing any religious institution to perform same-sex marriages, and the LGBTQ movement is not advocating for that. What we've won, and what Justices Thomas and Alito, and perhaps other members of the Supreme Court, apparently want to take away from us, is the ability to get married, civilly, under the law. The growing conservative majority on the Supreme Court is likely to threaten many rights, including women's rights of reproductive choice and civil rights for minorities, including LGBTQ people. If our marriage rights get eroded or even erased entirely, what's next? Are they going to make it illegal for same-sex couples to adopt children? Will this conservative court reverse its own ruling from 2003 and take us all back to a time when states could criminalize same-sex behavior? The thrust of the Thomas Alito statement is that the Obergefell case has led to public criticism of people who hold anti-LGBTQ religious beliefs. In the justice's view, apparently, religious beliefs and the people who hold them should be immune from criticism. As if sincerely held religious beliefs, even when they harm other people, should actually be deemed elevated and pure and well-intentioned. But the fact is that religion has historically been a force of horrible oppression for LGBTQ people. It's only in recent decades that public opinion in the US has shifted, and most people have grown not only to tolerate LGBTQ people, but even to support our equality under the law. As that has happened, people have come to understand that religious condemnation of LGBTQ people is wrong, and they are rightly criticizing it. In whatever way you might define bigotry, it must certainly include a desire to deny civil rights to a group of people based on who they are, whether it's based on skin color, LGBTQ identity, or something else. When bigotry is based on sincerely held religious beliefs, it's still bigotry. Marriage equality is simply part of the larger equality under the law guaranteed to all Americans by the Constitution. It harms exactly no one. So why are these people so opposed to it? Why are they so intent on trying to control other people's lives? Maybe it's because they feel oppressed in their own lives and can feel good about themselves only when they have someone to look down on. Maybe they actually feel superior to everyone else. Maybe some of them have their own issues of sexuality or gender identity, and because they can't resolve them, they lash out at those of us who are out of the closet and comfortable with who we are. Or maybe they think that their desire not to be criticized for their anti-LGBTQ religious beliefs outweighs LGBTQ people's right to equality. Think about that for a minute. They think that equality for LGBTQ people is less important than their right not to be insulted. Wow. Maybe they have an idealized and false notion of an earlier, simpler time in America, and they blame growing LGBTQ equality for how American society now seems to be unraveling. Maybe they have no capacity for empathy, and can't even imagine the effects on us if our right to marriage is taken away. Maybe they are just too stubborn to empathize with us, or any group of marginalized people. Whatever the reasons, their justifications for their wrong-headed views are easy to pick apart, and when we do, we start to see the holes in their logic. In the end, the reasons probably don't matter. These people just don't like us and don't want us to be equal, and the reasons are just justifications. As LGBTQ youth and allies, we're alarmed at how fragile our rights are and how easily they can be taken away. We're 15, 16 years old, and as we've grown up, our reality has always been that same-sex couples have the same right to get married just like everyone else. Now it feels as if our future families may get taken away. No matter how hard our elders fought for their rights, and ours, and despite the guarantee of equality in the Constitution, LGBTQ youth across America and LGBTQ people in general are still not equal. We wish that these religious homophobes, including Justices Thomas and Alito, could step into our shoes so they could experience this discrimination firsthand, so they could understand what goes through our minds when we hear that a basic right of ours, one that took decades of fighting to win, could be taken away. Consider the extreme position they're taking, installing a particular view of Christianity into the law and requiring everyone to live under it. It would turn the United States into a theocracy imposing religious law on everyone. It's part of why the American Revolution was fought, to avoid religion imposed on everyone by the government. Religion is a source of comfort and meaning for many people, but think about how it's been grotesquely misused, to oppose condom use during the AIDS epidemic when countless lives could have been saved, to oppress LGBTQ people and deny us our right to legal equality, to segregate the races, to justify slavery. Separation between church and state is an essential concept of American law, but it's being eroded, in considerable part, by religious homophobes, and we're going down the path toward theocracy. With the increasing domination of the court by conservatives, we have to worry about whether the freedoms we've won will still be freedoms tomorrow. Does that uncertainty sound like freedom to you? Liberty should be a freedom that lasts. With marriage equality, we thought we had that, but we don't, and it's very unsettling for us as LGBTQ youth. Justices Thomas and Alito want to take it away from us, and with just a few other conservative votes on the Supreme Court, they can. So are we free? It doesn't sound like it. Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, from Outcasting Media, creator of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Outcasting Media is produced by Media for the Public Good, based in New York. This piece was created with input from the Outcasting team, including Brian, Chris, Justin, Tim, and me, Lil. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and related content. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Hello, I'm Robbie Kaplan, the author of Then Comes Marriage, United States v. Windsor and the Defeat of DOMA. And you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
A new memoir by an America's Got Talent alum proves that he's truly a tenor for our times. Our John Dyer V displays his talent for getting behind the scenes with this international star.
Halal, halfingero.
Acclaimed American tenor Brandon James, who rose to fame on the 8th season of the TV show America's Got Talent, has released an honest and emotional memoir entitled Lyrics of My Life, My Journey with Family, HIV, and Reality TV. I recently spoke via Zoom with James about his life, his music, and the current state of affairs in late 2020.
So Brandon James, celebrated singer, performer, and now writer. Welcome to This Way Out.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've had so many amazing gigs and jobs, and I was just wondering, does any one particular job or series of jobs really stand out for you personally as the pinnacle?
Shortly after I was on America's Got Talent, I got a call to fill in for Josh Groban at Carnegie Hall.
Okay.
Yeah. And I got with Sarah McLachlan. And that was a pretty amazing experience.
I doubt you can top that one very much, huh?
Probably not. I'd been there before in high school singing, but with my high school choir, it was a little bit different to be there as a soloist.
And what was the event?
It was a charity Christmas concert.
In your book, you've written about having put all your energy into living in the past or just for the future. And I'm just wondering if you would care to share your thoughts about what it means to you and, you know, what it takes to remain living in the present moment.
Well, I definitely found that focusing myself in the morning of just doing 10 minutes of meditation really kind of helps set my intention for the day. And to remember to shut off that little voice in our heads that we all have, that we were all born with for whatever reason, that's constantly casting self-doubt or telling you to eat that cookie and then calling you fat for eating it. I was taught once in a life coaching situation that you should just treat it like the radio in the background. You know it's there, but you're not necessarily listening intently to everything that's happening. But it's there and you're acknowledging it and you move on with life. That's the best way I stay present, is just to kind of ignore that voice.
I was just curious what your recommendations would be that you use for boosting, you know, self-confidence and self-esteem.
Well, I don't know, because I kind of only more just recently feel like I'm in a place where I, to be honest, where I love myself again and care about myself enough and I'm proud of who I am. And that kind of came through the process of writing the book. And and understanding that I have a deep love for people, and it seems to be reciprocal. And I didn't believe that for so many years, for most of my life. I think it's a personal journey, and I think writing and journaling certainly helps, or finding some way to explore a little bit more about who you are. Therapy obviously works. Mm-hmm. And it sounds cliche, and I'm sure you've heard it before, but to talk to yourself kind of like a loving parent might talk to their own child. I often find myself saying, it's okay, you're going to be just fine. It's going to be great, you know, because I do need that reminding often.
That's beautiful. And I'm going to borrow that one. I like that very much. Thank you.
Please.
So in the book, you're amazingly detailed and specific, as I said, and this is more of a personal, curious question. Are you one of those people who remembers every little thing, you know, practically going back to your time in the crib, and it's always going, it's always recording?
I do have a vivid memory for detail and experience, and like I can smell and remember tasting things. But as far as writing a memoir in chronological order, there were some pieces I had to put together, and I did keep some journals in college and then later again in my 30s. And then also I called my mom and pieced some details together about my early childhood stuff. So she was a big help in that. But for the most part, I do have a pretty good kind of elephant memory.
In his memoir, Lyrics of My Life, My Journey with Family, HIV, and Reality TV, Brandon James opens up about pretty much everything. Next time, we even discussed affordable health care.
Am I allowed to use swear words?
Of course, we do also get to discussing his music.
No.
This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Marcos Nahira and Carol Myers, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Outcaster Lil, produced by Mark Sophos, and from John Dyer V. ABBA and Brandon James performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from the late Christopher David Trentum, and donors David Hunt and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WRWK Midlothian, Virginia, 2CCC Gosford, New South Wales, KBRP Brisbane, Arizona, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, y'all, and stay tuned.